אתם עם SBS בעברית. לעוד סיפורים מעניינים, כנסו ל-sbs.com.au.
Our next guest is Eilon Levy from Israel. Eilon is a British Israeli figure who served as the official Israeli government spokesman from October 2023 to March 2024. And is probably the most recognizable Israeli face on foreign TV when it comes to Hasbara. Shalom Eilon, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello, my pleasure to join you.
Tell us a little more about your recent role, the official spokesperson for the Israeli government.
For the last 6 months of the October 7th war, I found myself in very surprising circumstances, becoming an Israeli government spokesman. I wasn't in the role when the war started, I was a private citizen. But the massacre happened, Hamas invaded, brutally murdered 1,200 people, abducted 253 people, and Israeli society mobilized everyone chipping in to do their bit to help us win this war against Hamas and bring back the hostages. Now, I'm originally from the UK, studied in England. I have professional experience as a news anchor. I was an advisor to the president of Israel as well. So I started giving interviews, and within a week, I found myself being conscripted into the Prime Minister's office as an official Israeli government spokesman to tell Israel's story in an increasingly hostile world.
You know, it's often said that life experience and long careers, they lead you to senior roles. And you're still in your 30s, and yet the government decides to appoint you to the official spokesperson. Not that it's wrong or anything, but yet, very impressive.
Well, you know, in every crisis, there's an opportunity. And when the massacre erupted on October 7th, Israel was really caught with its pants down. Militarily, of course, we were not expecting Hamas's brutal invasion. But in terms of government comms as well, the Prime Minister's office didn't have a spokesperson. And in the early days of the war, they were completely overwhelmed with requests for interviews at the peak. Together with my colleagues, we were doing well over 30 interviews a day because we were the only news story in the world. And so the country was simply looking for people who could master the facts, speak articulately in English, persuasively, making Israel's case. And so I found myself as part of the emergency civilian mobilization inside Israel, putting on a suit and a tie and giving interviews. And as the interviews progressed, we started doing press conferences and social media, and everything escalated from there.
And I assume you gave interviews to almost every country in the world.
Every continent on Earth bar Antarctica. I'm still to get my interview with the penguins. Absolutely. I mean, I managed during my time in the role to do over 280 interviews, another 50 press conferences, and really an extraordinary range of countries. The UK and the United States featured very prominently, but there were also interviews with Norwegian media and Nigerian media and even Iranian media. I gave a long, in-depth interview to Iran International, the dissident channel based out of, in English, it was dubbed into Farsi. But Iran International is a dissident channel based out of Washington and London. Their own reporters are persecuted by the regime because they present a story that the fanatical regime in Iran is not happy with. But they want to hear our message here in Israel.
You know, we did a little research about your studies, and you've written an interesting master thesis in Cambridge University about Jewish refugees who fled Arab countries in the 1940s and 50s. Could you tell us about it, and why is it an important issue?
At the time that I did my master's thesis, it felt like a piece of history, but it couldn't be more relevant or contemporary because the story that is increasingly being told about Israel around the world is of a settler colonial state of white people who swept into the land of Israel out of nowhere and dislodged the Arabs and took over their land. And the truth is that when Israel was established, it was established as a refuge for Jews fleeing persecution from Europe, and very quickly absorbed waves of Jewish refugees from all over the world. In the decades after Israel was founded, about 850,000 Jews from Arab countries were forced to flee or tried to escape and made their way to Israel, including my own grandparents who came from Iraq. In some countries, they were expelled. Other cases, they were stripped of their nationality or of their assets or otherwise persecuted. And interestingly, this was happening at around the same time that the Palestinian refugee issue was created. Let's remember, the UN decides to endorse the creation of two states on the territory of the former British Mandate. The Arabs reject that proposal, invade Israel when it declares independence. And as a result, there's a large wave of Arabs who flee their homes in 1948-49. But at the same time, Israel also absorbs a wave of Jewish refugees from around the world. Now, Israel takes responsibility for that. It says, we don't want them to be refugees. We want to build permanent homes for them and integrate them. And now Israel is an amazing multicultural hodgepodge where people will tell you that their heritage is, oh, I have one grandparent from Morocco and another from Poland and another one from Tunisia. And that's in complete contrast to the Palestinian refugees who have been kept as refugees by the international community for the last 75 years using an artificial definition of refugee in a way that makes it impossible for them to be rehabilitated and to build new lives. And instead of bringing this conflict to a conclusion, exacerbates it and aggravates it by telling them that 1948 isn't over yet.
I would like to talk now about the Hasbara issue around the world. And I think that you said that you don't need to be a Hasbara expert in order to help with Hasbara. Could you please explain what did you mean by saying that?
Look, at the end of the day, the world doesn't care about Israel, but the world may care about Israelis. Dry facts, military strategy, not interesting. People's stories, critical. And I remember in the first days of the war, when I was still a private citizen and I was tweeting, the material that got the most attention was interviews with survivors of the Nova Festival, where over 370 people were slaughtered at that music festival. They were giving interviews on Israeli TV. I stuck subtitles on it, spread it around the world, and that went viral because people want to hear people's stories. They want to hear about the hostages, what they experience, what we know is happening to the hostages right now, what their families are undergoing, what it's like to live undercover of constant rocket fire and have to wake up in the middle of the night and grab your children and run to the rocket shelter. And so it's critical that, you know, when fighting a fight like this, the communications can't come just from the government. It also needs to come people to people. And individuals need to share what they're experiencing in Israel in the context of the hostages and the war and the rockets, but also around the Jewish world where we've seen a shocking upsurge in anti-Semitism. And it's important that people understand how it's affecting their neighbors.
You must have talked to many overseas leaders and diplomats. Do you feel that they understand the predicament of Israel better than what we see on television or social media?
Foreign leaders definitely understand Israel's predicament better than the general public, and that is why they find themselves being tied into knots, because our allies understand that Israel must win this war. They understand that if in the wake of the October 7th atrocities, Hamas holds on to hostages, remains free to perpetrate another atrocity, that would be a massive setback for international peace and security. And Lord Cameron, the British Foreign Secretary, wrote just the other day, no one can expect Israel to live next to Hamas any longer, because if that happens, the next war is only a matter of time. The problem is, public pressure makes it very difficult for leaders to say what they know to be true, that the only response to the October 7 atrocities, to this war that Israel was forced into, is that Israel must defeat Hamas. And that public pressure makes it very difficult for them to stick to what they understand to be an essential national security interest for their own country.
Public opinion is extremely important nowadays. From your experience, are the Israeli politicians, and in particular the cabinet members, fully aware of it?
I think during this war we have had a number of statements from politicians that have been, to put it mildly, not helpful at all. Politicians who make statements not understanding how they will be understood in context, out of context, that end up giving misleading impressions about what Israel's policy is in this war. But absolutely, the country understands that international legitimacy is critical for our ability to prosecute this war against Hamas. So on the question of humanitarian aid, for example, the Prime Minister has explained to the Israeli public, who rightfully feeling angry that Israel's border crossings are being used to transfer fuel into territory that was used to perpetrate the October 7th massacre while the hostages are being starved. He says, listen, humanitarian aid is important because not only for its own reasons, but also because it allows foreign countries to continue supporting us. You know, that there are the obvious inherent reasons why it's important to get humanitarian aid in. But it's also important for Israel's legitimacy in continuing to prosecute this war against Hamas.
Could you give us an example or two of where you and your team made a positive difference with world leaders?
I think it's a cumulative effect of popping up on the news all the time. Every time you switch on BBC or Sky News and there's an Israeli government spokesperson continuing to hammer home the messages. And I really think that it's not something you can take for granted that 6 months after the war, Israel's allies still understand what it is doing and why it is fighting. You might have expected the world to force Israel somehow to try to abandon the campaign against Hamas, let it off the hook for the October 7th massacre. But that's not the case, because Israel has been doggedly making its case around the world.
To conclude our conversation, what would you advise for both sides? What could be done better to stop the current conflict?
It is important to continue reminding the world about the hostages all the time. Do not let the world forget that there are 133 hostages, over 30 of whom have already been killed, and the hostages are being starved and tortured and executed and raped by Hamas and by Islamic Jihad. And this is not a sideshow. It's not a distraction. It is a core reason why we are fighting this war, to physically extract the hostages wherever we can, and otherwise to put military pressure on Hamas to release them. And it's so important that people who want to see this war end, who want the suffering to end, who want to see the hostages out and aid in, need to pressure Hamas and its backers. Because if Hamas thinks that the world is going to throw Israel under a bus and do its work for it, then Hamas is just going to toughen its positions and won't agree to any negotiations to release the hostages. And then we're going to have no choice but to keep fighting to get them out.
Don't you think Israel should initiate a pause right now and consider a ceasefire, even for a short time?
Israel would love to have a pause in the fighting like we had in November to get the hostages out. But Hamas is not interested in using the hostages as a bargaining card for a pause in the war. Hamas wants to use the hostages as a bargaining card to end the war, emerge, declare victory or a draw, and plot more October 7th attacks again and again, as it is threatening to do. And Israel has said that is obviously unreasonable. We cannot live next to the Hamas terror regime anymore. And unfortunately, every time Hamas hears world leaders pressuring Israel not to enter Rafah or to withdraw forces or to unilaterally cease fire, Hamas says, well, what's the point of accepting a deal? Why should we accept the terms that are being discussed now? If we wait a week, wait another 2 weeks, the world will keep blaming Israel and we'll be able to get an even better deal out of this. And in the meanwhile, the hostages are dying and suffering.
Ilan Levy, who served as the official Israeli government spokesperson from October 2023 to March 2024, thank you so much for speaking to us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
עקבו אחרינו והפיצו אותנו דרך דף הפייסבוק שלנו.